Good morning, and may it please the court. I'm Donna Morosky for Chancellor Reed. I would like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. This is an idea case, and I know that the court is very familiar with the facts, so I just want to emphasize two of them. The first is that when the parents initially sought reimbursement of expert fees, the District of Columbia Public Schools, or DCPS, properly denied the fees at issue in this appeal on the grounds that they were not properly documented. Second, when the parents finally supplied the necessary documentation months later and again sought reimbursement from DCPS, this court had ruled in Goldring that IDEA does not authorize courts to award expert fees. The district court, in its initial decision, said in Goldring in a subsequent Supreme Court decision, did not authorize courts to award fees.
Okay, courts. Okay, got it.
Well, initially the district court denied fees, I'm citing Goldring in a subsequent Supreme Court decision, agreeing with Goldring. On reconsideration, the district court reversed itself and ruled that since DCPS had a, quote, voluntary, end quote, policy of paying the fees at issue, the parents were entitled to reimbursement of the expert fees. We believe that this decision is wrong and really has no legal basis. The first point that we would make is that DCPS's policy was not voluntary in the true sense. Instead, as the language of the guidelines state themselves, it was based on the then existing legal landscape. The provision
besides that, it says consistent with recent judicial decisions and the provisions of 28-1920.
That's correct.
So, and I have a problem seeing where they can voluntarily do anything with this. I mean, this is not their money to just simply give away as they see fit. I mean, they've got to, they're authorized to do certain things with all the funds that are within their province. And this idea that somehow they can voluntarily give this money, frankly, I don't know how the district judge bought it, but.
Well, I was sort of baffled by that too, but I think what happened here, I mean, there are sometimes, as in this case, legal obligations that may not be all that clear, and certainly I think an agency can use money to pay for its legal obligations and to sort of settle some other potential legal obligations in order to avoid massive litigation. And I think that is what happened here. But I think
what was the phrase the district used, the consistent with?
It is consistent with recent judicial decisions.
But weren't the recent judicial decisions themselves inconsistent?
Well, I think these were consistent with certain recent judicial decisions. Beginning in 1992, parents had a string of victories in the U.S. District Court that held that IDEA does authorize court-awarded expert fees. It wasn't until 2004 that the district managed to secure a contrary ruling in the district court, and of course, Goldring was one of them. I think there may have been another, but I'll just go with Goldring. Obviously, the policy set forth here is not consistent with Goldring, but it is consistent with the vast majority of the district court decisions that were extant at that time. In fact, there were so many of them, I think, when I argued Goldring, I recall that the counsel for the parents urged that all these district court decisions, you know, were so many that they constituted the law of the circuit. So that, I think, is clearly what the guidelines are referring to.
And the argument was that there were so many district court decisions that it was the law of the circuit?
Yes, that's what the parents argued. They were
enough zeros is one?
Well, that's what they argued. I disagreed with their approach, but
you prevailed on that.
Yes, we did, and in a wonderful opinion written by Judge Henderson.
They were given some money originally, weren't they? Some of these experts.
Yes, they were.
Yeah.
They were, and others were declined as undocumented.
What is the district's current policy on this?
It is not part of the record, and I would have liked to include it, have included it, but it did change its guidelines in light of Goldberg.
Is there a public document somewhere?
I think it's on their website.
So I think we can take notice of that.
Yeah. The other thing the parents argue here is that DCPS intentionally relinquished a known right, and of course this cannot be true. There was no known right in 2005. Whether when these guidelines were promulgated, whether there was a right to court-awarded expert fees, so we didn't relinquish it at all. The other thing I think I would like to mention is that since there is no federal predicate for the award of fees, this boils down to a local law question. And the parents here have not cited a single decision of the District of Columbia Court of Appeals that would support the notion that these guidelines have some legal effect. They're certainly not rules or regulations. They're not published in the DC Register. And in fact, DCPS would be free, would have been free, I think, at any time, you know, the stroke of the pen, or here, I guess, a keystroke, to change this guideline at will and just say, for example, in light of the most recent district court decision, Goldring, we no longer will pay expert fees, and then we would have had a flood of litigation.
Where do we find this information? Current policy, you say, keystroke. Where is it on the web?
I don't know. I just noticed in something yesterday when I was preparing that this may be obtained from the D.C. What's actually, I think, someplace I just read yesterday. It may be.
Well, we were unable to find it yesterday.
Oh, that's interesting, because the ones they have before, says these guidelines, this is on JPEGS 55, the old ones, these guidelines and the reference documents are also available on the DCPS website at blah, blah, blah.
Page JA.
This is JA 55. These are the old ones. And I guess I looked at that and assumed that the new ones probably are available, too. But I could certainly check that.
That's what my law clerk checked without success, that site. Why don't you give us a letter and serve?
That would be fine. I'd be happy to do that.
The guideline on JA 93-94 is from where? Or from when?
JA 93.
That's February 2005, right?
Yes.
Which is, and when was
January 20, wait.
And when was this, let's see, they requested the rest of this on in April of 2005? So this would be what was in effect then?
Yes, yes, this was definitely in effect at that time.
Okay, starting at not JA 91, okay, okay.
Yeah. The only thing that these guidelines aren't laws, laws or regulations, and I think the only recourse the parents would have had in this case, given that it's solely local law, is to take some kind of appeal under the D.C. Administrative Procedure Act from a final decision, in which case you would have had a record review of the agency decision, and you can't supplement it on appeal. And here, I think the agency decision would have been initial agency decision would have been upheld on the grounds that things were not properly documented, and the second decision, which was an implicit denial, would have been upheld either on the grounds that it was untimely, the reconsideration motion was untimely, or because the law no longer authorized court awards of attorney's fees. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms.
Good morning. May it please the court. First, I would like to answer Chief Judge Ginsburg's question about where you can find the guidelines, because I, too, looked yesterday to check for them. If you go to the general counsel's portion of the DCPS website, there are guidelines for the submission of attorney's fees. And as of when I checked yesterday, the website still had up the guidelines that are in the joint appendix, at least when I looked yesterday. It's the DCPS website has been substantially redesigned recently, and it's a little bit difficult to navigate. I have a direct link on my browser to that portion of their website and checked it yesterday. I also would like to correct one misstatement of the facts. The expert fees that were awarded by the district court had been disallowed at the administrative level on two grounds. Roughly half of them were disallowed, allegedly because the expert had not sufficiently documented his services. The other half were disallowed because the district declined to pay expert fees incurred either before the due process request was submitted or after the hearing ended. And that was not a documentation issue and did not appear to be anything that could be resolved administratively. That seemed to be a legal question. What is incurred in connection with a hearing, which was their standard? So there were two different issues with respect to the expert fees. It was not simply a documentation issue.
But now, your first request was in April of 05, right?
Correct.
And in July of 05, you did receive $29.65.
Correct.
Okay, so this is for the remainder.
Yes, the final request was just shy of $9,000 on expert fees, and they awarded slightly less than a third of them.
Okay.
What I'd like to address is the issue of what were the current judicial decisions in effect in February of 2005 when the guidance that's before the court was adopted. And it is correct that in this jurisdiction there had been no definitive ruling from the circuit, and there were a number of district court decisions. They had gone both ways. Probably more of them had awarded expert fees than not, but there were at least two as of February 1st, 2005, in which the court had found that expert fees were not awardable. One was the district court decision in Goldring, which was at that point on appeal. And then there was the George decision cited in the Goldring case, which had also declined to award expert fees. There were at least two. There were other decisions from other circuits that had gone both ways. There was the Ahrens case. All of these were argued to the court in Goldring that had held almost as a matter of dicta that expert fees were available. The actual issue in Ahrens was not whether expert fees were payable, but rather whether a non-lawyer advocate who argued the law could be paid legal fees under IDEA, and the Ahrens court had rejected that, but had said there's no dispute she can be paid as an expert. The other two cases that this court also cited in Goldring had gone the other way and had found that expert fees were not payable. All of those cases were decided well before February 1st, 2005, when DCPS adopted its administrative guidelines. Therefore, the law was in flux. DCPS chose to follow the law that says that expert fees are payable, as opposed to standing on its position, which it was in fact advocating at this point before this court in the Goldring case, that expert fees are not payable. And on that basis, having chosen to do so and having in fact paid some of the Fisher's expert fees, it was obligated to follow its own guidelines and policy consistently. And that was the heart of what was argued to Judge Sullivan.
Well, by the time that they declined to pay the remainder of the fee, hadn't Goldring been decided?
Not at the time that they issued their guidance. You may recall, Your Honor, that they decided the fee request in May of 2005, but for some reason they mailed that decision to the wrong address. My office did not receive it until July. By the time we received it, Goldberg was about to be issued, and in fact came down during the 30 days after we received it, but they decided it pre this court's decision in Goldring.
So, in other words, the district changed its policy not because of any court decision, but rather to align it with its litigating position.
I'm not sure that you...
Thereby aligning it, Libby's, with this litigant.
No, I don't think you can, I don't think you can say that about their decision with respect to the Fisher's request for expert fees, because the final allocation of what they would pay and what they would not pay does not say anywhere expert fees are not payable. They did it solely based on an analysis of what they felt was payable by, in this case.
They declined on a different ground.
Entirely, Your Honor.
And then the Gold Ring decision came down.
That is correct.
As it turns out, they said we don't have to pay at all.
That's right. When the time came to file the fee motion before Judge Sullivan, which was filed after we resolved the merits of the case, at that point they interposed solely this court's decision in Gold Ring as a defense to paying any further fees. And I would like to note that to the extent that there is a complaint that the Fishers did not return administratively to the District of Columbia Public Schools to bring the additional documentation that was said to be wanting, I would point out that that has not been raised and, in fact, has been waived as to the two other elements of the Fishers' fee and expense request that were disallowed at the administrative level. The district disallowed a small amount of non-expert expenses, approximately $62, also saying they were incurred before the due process request was made, and they disallowed several thousand dollars in legal fees, again saying those fees were all incurred before the due process request was submitted. All of those were presented to Judge Sullivan on the motion for attorney's fees that was filed after the merits were resolved below. And the district has never argued that either of those, the non-expert costs or the legal fees, should have gone back administratively. So the position is inconsistent on that issue. In fact, the only argument that was made to Judge Sullivan was that expert fees aren't payable under Gold Ring, and of course that the court should enforce the fee cap on legal fees that obtains in the District of Columbia, in which this court affirmed in Callaway. But there was no further substantive challenge to any portion of the Fisher's request in any of the three categories requested. And the first time we've ever heard about some obligation to go back to the district administratively with the additional information that was presented to Judge Sullivan was in the brief. And you may recall that there was a motion for summary affirmance. We cross-moved for summary affirmance to affirm the district court's award of the additional the additional legal fees and the additional expenses, and the district specifically disavowed any interest in challenging those awards.
If you had gone back, wouldn't the appeal be to local court, or am I confused?
I do not believe it would have been to, if we, just to make sure I understand your question, if we had gone back administratively and requested those disallowed fees, assuming that they had been further disallowed, I believe they would have been part of the submission to Judge Sullivan. It's still an IDEA determination, and in fact, we had a case pending in the district court at that point because the administrative due process determination had been mostly in the Fisher's favor, but not completely. We had appealed the portion that we lost, and that was what was settled with an agreement that the fee request for both administrative fees and court fees would go to Judge Sullivan.
Well, what's this violation of the D.C. Code 251510? Alleging a violation of I thought that's what that D.C., the District of Columbia was saying with this administrative claim.
I believe that has to do with the district's claim that this administrative guidance doesn't have the force of law because it wasn't published under the Administrative Procedures Act, and it's not a regulation. We did not specifically allege that popped up in the reply brief. Our position is that it was a policy that the district has adopted. The district, for example, for many years had a policy, which also was ultimately held not to be required under the IDEA, of accepting the burden of proof in all administrative cases. which, of course, in Schaefer versus Weiss, the Supreme Court said goes on whoever requests the hearing. And yet for many years, and even after, for a period of time after Schaefer versus Weiss, the District of Columbia accepted the burden of proof in every special education case. So our, okay. I think the court understands our position. Thank you.
I just have a couple of small points. First, and I don't mean to quibble, but I do think we fairly characterized the initial decision as a lack of documentation decision by DCPS, because although DCPS said it would pay in connection with a due process hearing, one of the objections was there was some service incurred after a due process hearing, and when they finally explained, it was that the hearing officer at the due process hearing had asked for this. So it was a lack of documentation throughout. I find myself listening to this and having the parents here say, well, what we should have done, we should have been very aggressive and immediately aligned our litigating position, our policy with our litigating position and denied these things across the board. I think had we done that, we would have heard a loud outcry. And I don't think it's necessarily bad if the DCPS is going to err that it errs on the side of encouraging the implementation of the idea. It shouldn't be held, shouldn't be punished for doing that, certainly. And the other thing I will say is that I don't think the parents in this case have established a legal basis for the award that was made in this case. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Moreski. Ms. Sever, thank you. Case is submitted.
Case number 07-1.